How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine, even on a day like this, where the Boston Celtics, not exactly coming up big against the New York Knicks, giving up 117 points to the Knicks without Porzingis, losing 117-106 at home to the Knicks. Tonight's show is brought to you by Bourbon. Doesn't matter the brand, bourbon, a tasty way to get past a crap loss like this. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Sam Packard. Jay King is in the locker room right now trying to figure out what the hell happened tonight. But we're going to sit here and try to break things down. So let's, I guess, start at the end. And a fourth quarter that actually saw the Celtics get outscored by six and Isaiah Thomas not be the king in the fourth. He actually, well, I'll put it this way. He had 8 points, which is normally a pretty good fourth quarter, but he wasn't like his normal self. He shot 2 of 9, didn't hit a three. 4 of his points came from the free throw line. He was the Celtics' leading scorer in the fourth, and I don't know, maybe. Are we expecting too much of him, Sam?
It's hard not to after he puts on a stretch like he has the past couple of weeks, but it felt like the Celtics didn't have the effort the entire night or kind of after the first 10 minutes of the game and were just kind of looking to him to be the savior. And he's not going to be able to do that every single night. And it seemed like the Knicks focused all their attention on Isaiah and there wasn't any sort of outlet for him to just to be a minor distraction on offense. It just seemed like it wasn't his night. And if Isaiah is going to need to score like 15 points every fourth quarter to win games, it's going to be problematic. He still finished with 39 points, which is amazing, but it was just the fourth quarter just kind of seemed like the Celtics had, I don't want to say given up, but they're effort was definitely lackluster.
Very much so. When you look at that fourth quarter, and I go back to the Toronto game, the fourth quarters that work and the fourth quarters that don't. The fourth quarters that work are the ones where other guys are doing things that they normally do at the very least, but Jay Crowder, 2 points off of 2 free throws. Al Horford, 2 points in the fourth quarter. Smart, 0. The scoring in the fourth quarter came from Isaiah, who had 8, but not a very productive 8. He missed a lot of shots. Jaylen Brown had 6. Terry Rozier had 5. 11 points from 2 guys who shouldn't even be playing in the fourth quarter. That was the extent of other guys doing things. So, you look at the team and you see everything that Isaiah has been doing, and he's been masking a lot in fourth quarters. And when he's not his ungodly best that leaves us slack-jawed on post-game podcasts, you start to see the warts. It's like washing the makeup off of the face, and you say, oh, there are blemishes there. So that's where the Celtics are. He didn't have a great fourth quarter. I want to go back to the second quarter, because the Celtics had – we forget that in all of this, the Celtics started out the game pretty well. They had a 9-point lead in the first quarter. Now, they didn't
– they were amazing. They had the first quarter, they had 12 assists or 13 field goals on 12 assists. The ball was moving crisp. They were doing a lot of great things, and then the bench came in.
Yeah, and you look at maybe – okay – no Avery Bradley, so that changes the rotations a little bit. At the end of the first quarter, you have Rozier in against, I should say, rather than Marcus Smart. And Rozier comes in and gives up. I forget who hit the three at the end of the first quarter, but you could see Rozier couldn't close out. He was trying to defend, and his rotation wasn't crisp. He didn't close out right. He gave up a three at the end of the quarter. Celtics couldn't close out the quarter. And then Brad Stevens in the second quarter brings in an all-bench lineup, which included Olynyk, that I'll get to in a minute, Rozier, Brown, Jarebko, which we'll get to in a minute, and who was the fifth?
Gerald Green,
yes.
For
sorry.
His only stint of the game.
That was a complete and utter disaster. And I don't know if Brad Stevens thought, look, it's the Knicks. We're shorthanded. Let's give our guys a chance to rest. Let's throw this team out there. Let's give them an opportunity to maybe kind of gel a little bit together, kind of figure things out together. A complete disaster. And it felt like, I'm sure people in the New England winters will understand this, when your car stalls and you could just never get it started again. It's just gone. It's dead. That battery is dead. That the team could never really recover from that. After that all-bench lineup, the entire rest of the game was just shit. There was no big run. There was no nothing. The Celtics just couldn't get anything back after that.
They almost did kind of... some points in the third quarter, they cut it to one twice, and that was again with the starters kind of building back and trying to, but they could never really get it over the edge. And that bench unit was just truly awful. After, like, the ball was zipping around, you just went to absolutely zero ball movement. And I think one of the major issues for this game was that the Knicks didn't play a traditional power forward once this entire night, because it seems, I think, Porzingis is actually their only kind of power forward on the offense. So they're basically playing all guards and wings with one center. And it felt like the kind of wing depth could really do nothing to guard any of the wings on the Knicks. Kelly Olynyk couldn't do anything out against on the perimeter. Jonas Jerebko has never been really good on the perimeter. Gerald Green couldn't do anything. It felt like Marcus Smart, because of that deficiency, had to kind of guard up. And you just had Derrick Rose and Brandon Jennings and Courtney Lee just blowing by the Celtics guards. It was just horrible defense. It was terrible to see. And I feel like that had an impact on the rebounding too. If you have one rim protector in there, he's going to have to help out on that drive. And then you basically just have no one else kind of helping back for rebounds. It was just a kind of sorry performance. I just felt like they were overwhelmed when the Knicks went small.
Yeah, and look, the Celtics... We exchanged messages back and forth during the game. One of my messages was, I feel like their defensive awareness has just gone away in this game. For some reason, and we're talking about the rebounding, there was the initial rotation, and that guy would either miss a shot or pass, and either there wouldn't be a secondary rotation to stop the guy who caught the pass, or there wouldn't be a box out to stop the other guys from crashing the boards and getting rebounds. The Celtics all night long were turning and watching. There was no effort whatsoever to get a body on a person and stop them from getting rebounds. They just, it's, I don't know what happened. I don't know if after all of these wins, they saw a bad team coming in and they thought, eh, that's okay. We're better than them. And they just didn't try. But the rebounding was so disgustingly bad because they didn't put any real effort into the rebounding. In fact, Brad Stevens afterwards, after the game, was asked about the rebounding, and he said the more desperate team, the better team, won tonight. He added, all of the technical stuff is out the window if you aren't flying around, and we weren't flying around tonight. That's effort. That's two quotes from Brad Stevens that blatantly, in a Brad Stevens way, call out the effort. And I think the effort is what was total shit after that second quarter.
Yeah, I'm watching the kind of montage Comcast put together of all the Knicks points, and it's kind of like the Celtics were playing the paint is lava, and they just were refusing to go into the paint. They're just planted on the perimeter on both defense, and that continued into boxing out. And it just it definitely feels like they overlooked the team and kind of were feeling themselves and were not as desperate as they needed performance. And I mean, yes, it's on the Celtics for losing, but Derrick Rose did come in here and just drop 30 points and 10 rebounds. He was amazing, and the Celtics really didn't have anything they could do to stop him. Just simple kind of medium pick and rolls. They didn't have anyone who could fight through. I think probably because Smart didn't really spend a lot of time on Avery Bradley, it felt like Thomas and Rozier really couldn't fight through picks, and Rose just basically had his way either going to the paint or in the mid-range game. It was just a bad defensive effort, and that immediately is going to make your rebounding just worse if you're just not moving or you're discombobulated on the defensive end of the court.
But this is part of the effort thing. Derrick Rose had 4 offensive rebounds. That's disgusting. And that isn't just him swooping in. That's not him getting long rebounds. He, on a lot of occasions, was along the baseline. He was just lost. You know, it wasn't sometimes when guards get a few rebounds. It wasn't Russell Westbrook. It was he got lost and had 4 offensive rebounds. How does Derrick Rose get 10 rebounds on you? That's disgusting. Marshall Plumlee, one of the Plumlee clones, comes in and gets 3 offensive rebounds. Who the hell is Marshall Plumlee? I didn't even realize this guy existed.
I thought he was in the military. I thought he was on some sort of naval base.
I mean, we know that the Plumlees, they're all the exact same age. They're all just cloned in some factory in the middle of Ohio, some secret, you know, clone distribution facility that just creates Plumlees to go to Duke and somehow become backup NBA centers. Willie Hernan Gomez had another 4 offensive rebounds. Okay, so the Celtics got out-rebounded tonight 57-33, which is disgusting, but they got out-rebounded 18-9 on the offensive glass, which is inexcusable. And that's all pure effort. That is all just complete pure effort. Let's get this out of the way. A lot of people are going to talk about Al Horford. He had a horrible shooting night. 2 of 14, 1 of 8 from 3. That is about as bad a shooting night as you're ever going to have while still actually making a shot. But he had 10 assists and 7 rebounds. So one of the few Celtics who was on the plus side in the plus-minus column. So Al Horford had a terrible shooting night, but a positive impact on the offense. Bad shooting nights happen. I feel like a lot of people might be listening, or I know people are tweeting, and somebody, in fact, as I'm talking, I'm going to try to call it up, that somebody has said that we want to talk about Al Horford being overpaid and stuff like that. That's, I think everybody has a bad shooting night. And I'm not willing to kill Al Horford over something like this. At Tyler W. Humphrey, can we start talking about Horford being overpaid? I like that on the Rain and Jays. Well, thank you for tweeting. Yeah, it's on the Rain and Jays. I disagree. When a guy goes out there and drops 10 assists, that's, I think, a positive impact. He fed Amir Johnson all night long. He did good things out there. He had a really good game, and the shots that he was taking, had no problem with. He just missed a lot of shots. Shit happens, and I think that's just that his shooting falls under shit happens. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I first saw that tweet, I felt like this is the moment when I really wanted, like, we wish I was a live radio broadcast so I could hit the drop of Mugatu from Zoolander going, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like, that should not be the reaction to this game. Yes, like, he was instrumental in the Celtics offense non-Isaiah edition, whereas him in the post, him and Amir Johnson really had a nice little two-man game working interior big to big passing, which I know you're a fan of. I thought Horford was good. He drew attention in the post and made the right pass, which he's always going to do. He finished in the plus. It's not, I mean, the overpaid argument's absurd. Just like, you have to, Celtics fans need to accept that that's what the going rate was for a player of Al Horford's caliber, and that it's like people still don't understand the salary cap and the kind of explosion in the salary cap, and just like how every team had max cap room. It's not a reflection, like the actual dollar value is not a reflection of anything, and they need to forget that. And nonetheless, Al Horford still played pretty well. Yeah, his shot didn't fall, but he still made a positive impact. If you really want to complain, let's look at the two kind of goofy-looking white guys on the bench. Jonas Jerebko in 16 minutes was a minus 21, and Kelly Olynyk in 13 minutes was a minus 11.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. I'll just say this. This thought just popped into my head. I paid $3 for a cup of coffee today. And when I do that and my father is with me, he gets so pissed off that coffee costs $3 because he remembers when coffee was like 75 cents. And he's like, that's the most overpriced cup of coffee. And I'm just like, no, this is what coffee costs now. It costs me $3 to get a large cup of coffee, not 75 cents anymore, Dad. So Al Horford, whatever his contract, whatever you think his contract should have been, it's not that anymore. His contract, he's getting paid the market rate for what he does. So we need to get past that. Okay, back to your point, which was a very nice segue. I'm pissed off. We each, like, in our notes to each other, it's like we picked a guy to be pissed off at. I'm shaking my fist at Kelly Olynyk. You're shaking your fist at Jerebko. You want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I feel like Jerebko hasn't really done anything productive for the Celtics that I can remember in the past month, and it feels like he's a liability on the defensive end. And especially it felt like glaring in this game when the Knicks were playing so many wings. Jerebko's never been able to kind of guard a wing. He's not fast enough. He's just it felt like he got blown by a number of times tonight. And he didn't make up for it by making the number of hustle plays or, like, tips that, like, that's the reason we love Jerebko. If Jerebko's not doing, like, the extra effort, gritty, Swedish white guy things, then what value does he have for the team?
Let me tell you, he did have a couple of awesome after-the-whistle putback slams.
He did have, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what Jonas did tonight. He all his effort was for naught.
Kelly Olynyk, who I've been a Kelly Olynyk guy. I believe in his ability. Tonight, he went back to the things that piss me off and piss off a lot of people. Upfake Kelly. And when I sent you Upfake Kelly is back, you responded with, but he never left.
He's never left, man. He's been up faking the entire time. He just started actually ripping it for some from time to time.
Yeah. There, I tweeted out, if anybody's new to the show, you don't know my Twitter, it's at RedsArmy_John. I tweeted out a picture that I took off of my television. Kelly Olynyk. I can't even describe. So the play was, Isaiah had it on the left wing. He threw it to Kelly at the top of the key. Kelly's a good above-the-break three-point shooter. He didn't even look at the rim. He just caught it and flicked it right back to Isaiah Thomas. The defender was at the free throw line. He had all kinds of times to shoot. And I forget who it was on Twitter that responded to me, said even Amir Johnson could have gotten a three off in that amount of time. Like, that's how much space he had. He didn't even look. He didn't even try. And on a night where no one was giving effort, a Kelly Olynyk, some kind of effort, just be aggressive as a scorer type of guy, would have been really, really nice to see. We have him out there to be a three-point shooter. Shoot the goddamn ball, Kelly.
He was totally passive, Kelly, tonight. And
totally passive.
It felt like he was doomed as soon as he was part of that all-bench mob unit, just because they couldn't do anything. It felt like the entire, the confidence of all five of those guys was immediately shattered for the rest of the game. It didn't really make any sense. And it feels like Brad noticed it too. And maybe because 13 minutes is a very low total for Kelly Olynyk.
Yep.
I think it's a part to do with
16 for Jarebko.
Yeah. I think it's a part to do with his play, but a part to do with something I keep bringing up is just the Knicks were being kind of small and fast, but it's normally the lineup you kind of expect to see them close with. And this is something we talked about in a podcast on Monday, was has Olynyk earned time to be the starter or the closer, because he's the guy who spaces the floor and kind of gives you that shooting around Isaiah lineup. And just for them not to return to Olynyk whatsoever in the fourth quarter just shows you just how kind of ineffective these slow white doofuses were for the entire game.
Yeah, this is a bad night all around. I really, even Amir Johnson, who had a nice game, 10.7 rebounds, plus eight, a team high plus eight. He only played 19 minutes, not even.
I wanted to talk about this. It didn't make any sense to me. It felt like he actually played with some energy, especially early on in the game. He had a steal. He had a couple blocks. I felt like he was doing that perfect Amir Johnson thing for his first five baskets. He does that weird hook shot where he just stands completely straight up and doesn't really jump, and it somehow always goes in. Never looks like it's going to. I thought he had a really good game, and I just don't understand why he can't play more than 20 minutes. Like, his ankles have to probably explode. He made a deal with the devil. I'm not sure what it was, but it didn't make any sense to me why Brad determined that this small lineup or the lineups were not working against the small Knicks team. So why not put Amir Johnson at center and put Al Horford out on the perimeter? Like, that's kind of Al Horford's thing, is he can play out on the perimeter. Why are you trying Jarebko? Why are you trying Olynyk when it's clearly not working? We even saw Jordan Mickey in for the time. And I thought I've always been a big Amir fan, so I just don't get his injury situation. I thought he played a decent game. He led the team in reboundings, or tied Horford for seven, in only 18 minutes. Like, he was making a solid contribution. It didn't make any sense to me.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I just, the only thing I can say is that his legs are just not there. Look, let's just look at, to me, here's one stat, and plus minus is not the be-all, end-all. We know that weird things can happen with plus-minus. But this is, to me, very, very telling. Of the starters, Jay Crowder is the only one who had a negative. He had 21 points.
I thought he had a very nice game.
Yeah, 21, but he was a minus one. So, okay, so basically even. So the starters were okay. Brown, minus eight. Olynyk, minus 11. Rozier, minus 22. Jarebko, minus 21. Green, minus 6. Binky minus one. Okay. Let's go to the Knicks. All of their starters were in the negative. Bench, Marshall Plumlee, plus 11. Courtney Lee, plus 18. Justin Holiday, plus 23. Brandon effing Jennings, plus 19. Willie Hernan Gomez, plus 9. It's all about the bench. The bench came in for the Knicks in that second quarter and throughout the rest of the game and just beat the Celtics. This falls completely squarely on the Celtics bench. You can talk about Al Horford had a bad shooting night. If he had a good shooting night, maybe they would have won. Okay, sure. But if the Celtics bench had done anything, if Olynyk had just had a decent game, if now Rozier shot 1 of 8, if he had done anything, now he had a little stretch in the fourth quarter, bad game for him, bad game for Jarebko. Gerald Green came up with a stinker. Jordan Mickey, I'm not going to get on Jordan Mickey's case. He was fine for 5 minutes.
Two blocks. Mickey Train coming to town.
He did okay. Just the Celtics just, I don't know. I don't know what happened with the bench. You can't have Isaiah Thomas trying to bail you out every night. And a lot of bad things happened at the same time. We didn't even really get into Marcus Smart, who just didn't even, he scored, 4 points. So.
The one member of the bench who I thought did decent in context was Jaylen Brown. He did a pretty good job of attacking the rim, got to the line, was 6 of 7 from the line, ended up with 12 points. But he still doesn't know what he's doing on defense. I remember one play. In transition, both him and Jarebko took the same guy, and just both of them were basically pinned up against that guy underneath the basket and just watching Courtney Lee take a wide open three. And now, I don't know exactly what the communication issue was, but I'm just going to choose to believe that was kind of a Jaylen Brown rookie mistake. I could be wrong, and I could just be kind of
catching. Probably true. It's probably true. But you know what? The Celtics have had a lot of communication issues, a lot this year. And I don't Al Horford is the only real new guy that is in heavy rotation. I feel like by now we should have solved some of these communication issues, but we haven't. There's a lot of miscommunication on defense. There's a lot of, like, Marcus Smart should not have gotten torched by Derrick Rose like he did. Now, Derrick Rose might go back into the Wayback Machine and have a pretty good game, but Derrick Rose scoring 30 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists on 13 of 24 shooting, that shouldn't be happening anymore. And I feel like Marcus Smart on a few occasions did something to force Rose into what he thought was some sort of help, and that help wasn't there. So there is still a lot of miscommunication going on. I can't believe that that's due to one or two new guys or Avery Bradley not playing. There's just something that somehow it's just not getting through. And I can't exactly figure it out. Why are there so many miscommunications on defense at this point? Unless the guys just don't care to put in the effort on defense to get to the right place because they're just like, we'll outscore them. I'm just starting to think that at this point, a lot of these so-called miscommunications are actual proper communications, and somebody behind the perimeter guards are just saying, yeah, I didn't get there. Sorry. My bad. And I'll just go hit a three. I can't come up with any other explanation.
Yeah, it's not really making as much sense. And you think Al Horford, given his experience, would kind of be the quarterback of that defense, and maybe that's where some of the communication issues are. They're not used to each other, and maybe Jared Sullinger, who made his season debut tonight, is was really the kind of the thinker behind the Celtics defenses of yesteryear. But I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. But you're right. There's just too many times tonight where it's just Knicks getting layups or Knicks getting to the basket or just someone not showing on a pick and roll or just easy mid-range jump shots. And it's frustrating. Maybe this is something like that, you know, a team that's won 14 of 16 needs to go through so they can kick their ass and just get back into gear for the next couple of games. Because you know what, it's going to happen in sports and you're going to have to deal with it, but it's never fun to watch.
No. Yeah. You could just chalk it up to just the shitty game. Everybody has a shitty game. Look, the Toronto Raptors lost to the 76ers, and yeah, the 76ers are kind of on a roll right now, which weird to say, but well, it happens. It happens. The Raptors should beat the 76ers no matter what, but somehow that communication isn't, it's just not getting through. Somebody's not getting the message, and it's just not happening. I don't know. All right. That's it for the game. Did you want to do the Embiid thing?
I don't know if I can do it after tonight.
Let's just do it.
Okay.
Okay. So this is you guys, if you want to just shut the podcast off now, I get it. We're going to talk a little bit about this Twitter thing that I got into. Jay King didn't want to talk about it last night. We'll just get through it real quick. I tweeted out yesterday. Well, you're listening to this on Thursday. I tweeted out on Tuesday that I don't think Joel Embiid should be eligible for the Rookie of the Year award because he's been in the league for 3 years. This is his first year playing actual basketball, but he's been paid by the Sixers for 2 years. And so to me, at this point, he's no longer a rookie. This is not his rookie season. This is his third year in the league. He just hasn't played a game yet. So my contention, and now I'm not saying if I had a vote, I'm not saying I wouldn't vote for him because he's eligible. So under the current rules, he's eligible. So he's the runaway Rookie of the Year. But if I had my druthers, he wouldn't be eligible, and we'd be having a different discussion for Rookie of the Year this year, which is a horrible year for this because there's no rookie that's really standing out. But so my contention, and Sam completely disagrees, is that Embiid has been in the league for 2 years. He has had 2 years worth of opportunity to learn playbook, NBA terminology, to sit next to Brett Brown and understand what Brett Brown wants, to go through the NBA life, the locker room expectations, the media obligations, the charity things that he has to go through, all of that stuff to make all of his stupid rookie mistakes and not have to do that while he's playing. And because of that, after 2 years of learning and sitting and watching and understanding what NBA life is about, I think that gives him a little bit of an edge despite not being able to play actual basketball, because guys like Buddy Hield and Chris Dunn and all of the other guys that are out there, they're doing all of that stuff and trying to actually play and learn on the fly. So to me, I don't think he should be eligible.
I mean, we've been talking past each other for the past 2 days, but it's an award for on the court performance, and he has yet to be on the court. I don't really buy it, like, into the so he like was able to make the lifestyle adjustment, but he didn't actually get to play basketball, and he's come back and been this dominant. I don't like know what the other kind of standard for what a rookie is would be if a player comes in and plays the D League for 2 years and then becomes into the NBA, does it not count as like a rookie? I don't understand how you can kind of have any other unit of analysis other than first time playing NBA basketball.
Well, okay. So someone brought up Julius Randle, which is a great example. How much time did Julius Randle play in his rookie year?
13 minutes.
Do those 13 minutes count for anything? What did he do in those 13 minutes that somehow make him more than a rookie than Embiid or Blake Griffin was, or Nerlens Noel or David Robinson or other guys who missed rookie years due to injury. He went out and played 13 minutes.
Basketball Reference. Yeah, he played 13 minutes. He was a rookie for 13 minutes. He crossed the
13 minutes. From
not NBA player to NBA player.
That's 13 minutes.
It's unfair to Joel Embiid, but I mean, to Julius Randle, but that was his rookie season. He actually got onto the court. So what you're trying? So you think he should have been in consideration for the following year's rookie of the year? Kind of making the backwards argument. Are you saying that wasn't the season?
I'm saying that if 13 minutes counts for a rookie year, then let me rephrase this. Embiid played 0 minutes. Randle played 13 more minutes than that. He didn't even play a whole game. He played fewer minutes than Kelly Olynyk did tonight. He played 13 minutes. And somehow that erases his entire rookie year. Embiid played 0 minutes. Only 13 minutes less.
You're making no... Yeah, but so you think that the following year after Julius Randle came back and played a full season, he should have been eligible because he only...
If you're saying Embiid is eligible, then there should be a threshold for a guy who gets hurt within the first game or two of the season. If you play a game or two or five, that to me, I'll look at the Major League Baseball rule. There's a threshold within Major League Baseball where if you only get so many at-bats or you only play a certain amount of time, then you're still considered a rookie the next year. Either do that or say your first year in the NBA is your first year in the NBA, and if you get hurt, you get hurt. That's it. So 13 minutes versus 0 minutes, that's basically the same to me. If you play 0 minutes versus 13 minutes, that's basically 0 minutes to me. 13 minutes is meaningless. So if 13 minutes erases Julius Randle's season and you're okay with that, then 0 minutes erasing a rookie season is, you got to be okay with that. Or if you're saying Embiid is eligible, then you have to set a threshold of saying, well, up to 5 games and you get hurt or whatever the number is, you're still a rookie if you get hurt and miss the entire season and you come back the next year and you're still a rookie. Like, it's one or the other. But playing 13 minutes.
I'm completely fine with this, Randall, if you use kind of Major League Baseball, Julius Randle be eligible the next year. I just think, and if it's your first, I guess, full season on the...
Oh, this is a horrible time for you to be having technical difficulties.
Oh, no. How's it?
Yeah, now? You keep cutting out, but that's all right. We get your point. This is a point I've been fighting for 2 days. People in Philly, and I know you're in Philly now going to school and trying to change the world. I applaud you for that. I feel sorry for you for having to live in Philadelphia to do it. But my point is, after 2 years in the NBA, you have 2 years to acclimate yourself to the expectations of NBA life. And you sit on the bench during home games. You understand what's expected of you. You understand what the game is. You understand the speed a little bit better. When you actually start to play, you can draw on some level of experience, which makes you not a rookie. The whole point of the rookie of the year, to be the best rookie, you have to have had, you come in and you, everything is a factor. Everything is a factor. You're learning a playbook. You're like, oh shit, I got to go here. I got to go there. I got to go lift now. I got to do this. I got to do that. And oh, what do you mean when you say this? Like, all of that stuff factors into me. So having 2 years of sitting there and learning a playbook and learning the situation and learning what travel is like and understanding the expectations and the rigors and all of that stuff, that to me takes away a mental aspect of the game that when you actually do play, now it's impressive, he's just playing out of his damn mind, but it still takes a lot of the things that distract you as a player, it takes those things away. We talk about distractions all the time. Is this a distraction? Is that a distraction? All of these things for a rookie, they're all distractions. And then, on top of everything, by now, on January 18th, 19th, they have played more games already than they played all of last year through March. And then they still got to go out and play another 41 games plus playoffs if you're lucky enough to be on a playoff team. That matters. That's big. So that's me. That to me, the qualification, whether it's Embiid, if Jaylen Brown had gotten hurt before the season and came back in 2 years and was having a 2010 season, I don't think he should have qualified either. That's just my take on it. He's no longer a rookie. He's not fetching donuts for anybody anymore. He's not carrying anybody's bags. He walks into a locker room with a first-year player out of college. He's making that player carry his bags because that player's a rookie and Joel Embiid is not.
Feels like we're having like two separate arguments here. Feels like you are after having spent 2 years on the bench, but then you're also upset that Jewel eligible after spending 13 minutes on the court and then the rest of the year on the bench. It's like, I don't understand it. You've been screaming 13 minutes for the past 13 minutes, but
I'm saying that the 13 minutes that disqualified Julius Randle is the same thing as Embiid playing no minutes, and he should be disqualified as well. That's what I'm saying. That the 13 minutes that Randle played are basically no minutes. You could play 13 minutes in the NBA, and that means nothing. It's basically zero. And basically zero and zero to me are the same thing. So if Randle is disqualified, then Embiid should have been disqualified.
Okay, well, I think we should wrap it up after this because I don't think we're going to agree on this. I would say neither of them should really be disqualified. It really should be your first kind of, if you play over 40 games in your first season on the court, I don't think either of them should be disqualified. But if you're going to set some sort of arbitrary limit, I think actually stepping on the basketball court would be the limit that you would set.
All right, agree to disagree. That's been my argument on Twitter. For anybody who's been following me and wondering what the hell I keep retweeting and calling people out about, I have this compulsion. When I feel like I'm right, and I know I am right on this, I know I'm right, I can't stop arguing it. I can't, because I feel like I need to prove my point. I think that's the Greek in me. I'm very stubborn. I'm very stubborn about this. If I know I'm right, until someone gives me an argument that in my head says, oh, shit, I'm wrong, I'm not going to stop. I have to stop, so I'm not going to keep doing it. After 2 days on Twitter, I've had enough. But if you're wondering why, that's why. So sorry. Sorry for being, you know, passionate like all us Greeks. That's just how it goes. Okay. I needed that discussion to get my mind off this very terrible game that the Celtics played against the Knicks. They lose 117-106. The Celtics lost. I mean, the Raptors lost to the 76ers. So we could look at that two ways. At least it didn't hurt us, but we also missed an opportunity to gain some ground on the Raptors. Whatever. Either way, the Celtics now are off until Saturday, when they play the Portland Trail Blazers in Boston at 5 p.m., a weird, weird time for the Boston Celtics to be playing a basketball game, 5 p.m. on a Saturday.
It's a return of the kid E.T. It's going to be amazing. Jay Crowder better not be upset when he gets a 20-minute standing ovation.
And all of the Celtics media goes hanging around Evan Turner's road locker to be getting the quote that they've been so dying for. I know everybody loves to loves him as their favorite guy to cover. So that'll be fun. I'll be in the house. I'll be wandering around the garden, one of my rare appearances inside the garden. So if anybody's there and you're listening, say hi. I'll tweet my whereabouts. So do that and subscribe. Rate us 5 stars. And even though we covered a very bad topic, look, I didn't want a podcast today. After that crap game, I didn't want a podcast. But we're here. We're doing it for you because we're trying to make sense of everything. And I hope we did that for you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for rating us 5 stars. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. They're our home. We are the Locked On Celtics Podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.